Yeah. And hit records on my demo.
Hello and welcome to episode 52 of Section 138. I'm Mark Cully, your host, and as always, I'm joined by Bryson. How are you, Bryson?
Good. Long time no talk and long time no record.
So no kidding.
Good to be back.
We just looked it up. It's been... we haven't done a podcast together since August. So yeah, it's been a while, but it's great to be back. And we have obviously so much to talk about. We're going to try to keep it down. The first thing I want to talk about just right off the bat is the new jerseys. We're recording this on Saturday afternoon. It's 12:20 right now. And Blue Jays just announced their new blue, powder blue jerseys about an hour ago now. And I want to get your thoughts on it before I talk about it. But what do you think about it?
First of all, they are absolutely phenomenal. I actually was completely surprised how they went to the powder pants as well, which gives them the option now to wear them on during the home games and away games, which is even cooler. So you'll be seeing them more often, no matter where they play. The jerseys itself look good. I guess pretty much what we all kind of expected, since they kind of teased the powder blue. But again, just seeing it for the first time makes it look so cool. I'm a huge fan of it. And even with the helmets, they moved to matte helmets as well, which look spectacular. It's kind of like a dark navy shade. And the hats are a similar color to the helmet. But again, the helmet as well, I wasn't expecting a matte helmet. So that's another cool option for them. And, you know, their uniforms, even before they revealed them today, you know, always, I thought, are at least one of the best in baseball. Ever since they went back to their usual colors and the colors that they should have always been in back in 2012. And, you know, it's another combination, a good addition to already what they have, which would be the white, the regular blues and the grays, which they will still wear. And again, spectacular uniforms, and I really like how they can wear them on during home games and away games with those powder pants. I think it's just a phenomenal look.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. I love these. When I saw the first announcement, first off, I just want to say the way that the Blue Jays presented this and marketed this, I think, was very smart. They sent out the package beforehand to all the Blue Jays writers in Toronto that had, you know, kind of three key pieces to it. They had a baseball that said new threads coming soon, hashtag new blue. And then they had two other kind of, I don't know what you would call them, but little like cards to display the hashtag new blue. And I just have to say, this is amazing marketing. And then we saw the presentation today. Totally not what I was expecting. I thought it was a little corny at times, but it was still amazing. And I loved those four guys, Kevin Biggio, Randall Grichuk, Bo Bichette, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., all kind of like modeling it. And I thought it was really great marketing. But I also just love the jerseys, because I think we expected them to be powder blue when we heard the hashtag new blue. There's been lots of talk lately, even just the last year, about bringing back powder blues. And I think they look phenomenal. Yeah, as you said, I didn't expect the pants to be powder blue too. And I also, just one weird thing, I love the hats. They're kind of like navy blue, and then the brim of the hat is powder blue. I love that. And I cannot wait to buy these. And I might buy one right now while we talk on the pod, because I love these. And yeah, I just think the Blue Jays did a really good marketing job on this. And I also think I'm just really excited for them, because the way the Blue Jays sold it, at least today in their presentation, was kind of like a new generation of Blue Jays baseball, which it really is, because you have all these players coming up and you have this kind of turn to being competitive. And I think it's really exciting that the Blue Jays are embracing this and making it something that they can market. And it kind of makes at least me feel kind of ownership for this new generation of Blue Jays baseball, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you were spot on with the marketing strategy, and they even moved the ceremony back about a half hour just because they wanted to fill the Rogers Center as quickly as possible. But yeah, the new generation, obviously, when they did the presentation, it was Biggio, Grichuk, Guerrero, and Bichette. So obviously, a lot of the new fresh faces that we were sort of familiar to, and pieces that will be, you know, big pieces towards our future. And again, you know, it just reflects on, you know, also a good offseason, obviously. One of their better offseasons in the past couple of years. We obviously know the money they've spent this year, the signings that we'll be touching on, obviously, within the next or the next few topics. But yeah, it's just a good vibe entering the season. And, you know, you gotta at least expect that this team will be a lot more competitive this year. And if, you know, a fall goes well, who knows where they can go.
Yeah. And, just to get some initial thoughts from, Instagram, some people saying those are epic. One person saying hot. A lot of people think that, it is just kind of the original Blue Jay jersey just redone, which obviously it is. And they alluded to that, the fact that, these jerseys are not totally new. Like, the Blue Jays have done it before, but I think their spin on it, and kind of modernizing it, I think they look great. And I'm really excited to see these on the field, and I'm really excited to buy a hat of it. But yeah, so that's awesome. Just a wonderful way to start the day for us. But we also want to talk about the Blue Jays off season, because this is our first podcast of the off season. So I want to get your thoughts, just starting off, on what the Blue Jays did. I thought they were a lot more active than I expected, or at least a lot more active than they've been in the last 2-3 years. Obviously, we saw them sign Ryu to a 4-year, $80 million contract. We saw them sign Travis Shaw. They made offers for Edwin Encarnacion. They signed Shun Yamaguchi from the Japanese League. They signed Tanner Roark. We saw a lot of interest from the Blue Jays in a lot of different players. And we also saw them willing to trade some players of our own that we didn't totally expect. So just in general, I thought it was a lot more active than it would be.
Absolutely. And, you know, the fact that they were active this year not only gives... It gives the fans, I would say, kind of a sigh of relief. You know, after that Ryu signing, I know fans can quickly change their opinion, but a lot of people seem to, or a lot of the Shapiro and Atkins supporters seem to, you know, a lot of them appeared to show up more than we usually expect. Obviously, they take a lot of heat on social media, but we were, you know, this was the big question: when will this team start spending money? Does Rogers have enough money to provide them, you know, for situations like this? And, you know, I guess before they actually did anything around the early offseason, Ross Atkins hinted that they were going to be active. And at first you kind of hear that and you just really don't, you know, not a lot of people buy it at first. And, you know, they started it off with a few depth pieces. And again, they also made a trade. They acquired Chase Anderson this month. And, you know, the area of improvement for this team needed to be starting pitching. They have Nate Pearson on, you know, on the rise, and we expect to see him at some point this season. We just don't know when, maybe a month or two in. But I would say they successfully, you know, upgraded their starting pitching. And again, that's an area that they needed to do. You mentioned the two signings they made with Ryu and Yamaguchi, which was also great. Tanner Roark, they're taking a chance on. And actually, Mark Shapiro spoke about this during his interview today after the reveal of the third jerseys. And they said that, you know, they see a lot in him, and they think that they have a ton of upside with him. And I guess, you know, I guess there's something to look forward to there. Matt Shoemaker's back as well, and after he tore his ACL. So, you know, the fact that they were active in upgrading the starting rotation, or even just pitching depth in general, was something that was needed with this team. We obviously know that they have the pieces for their lineup and the young guns that we know. And, you know, they're moving into their second season too, and it's going to be their first full season in the big leagues. So, you know, you hopefully expect good things and, you know, all of them to be good.
Mm-hmm. And I think you hit it right on the spot there, that the Blue Jays actually did what they needed to do. They got a lot of pitching. They got Tanner Roark, Chase Anderson, Ryu. They got a lot of guys that they needed to get. And I think that's a good sign. And I'm really happy that the Blue Jays actually were competitive in getting players this offseason, even if there was a lot of things that didn't work out. We saw earlier in the offseason they had interest in Dallas Keuchel, and they were making competitive offers to Keuchel. And even if some things like that didn't pan out, I'm totally okay with it, because they were successful in other ways. And I have to say, just overall, I'm very happy with this offseason. I think the Blue Jays actually committed to getting players in situations where previously they haven't. So overall, I am pretty happy, and I'm very excited going into this season. I think I am the most excited I've been going into a season, I think, since 2016, because the Blue Jays are probably looking to be the best they've been since 2016, I think, at least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. The Ryu signing too obviously capped it off for everybody. One of the best starting pitchers in the market, I believe he was up there anyway. He might have even been the best one. And, you know, the fact that you heard rumblings that they were interested in him, and at first, again, you don't know really how much that accurate that is, and it doesn't even mean they'd make an offer. But, you know, we heard all along through lots of insiders on Twitter that, you know, the Jays were making offers. And again, a great thing to see. And I was a little bit surprised when I first saw the alert that they signed him, but I was also really excited at first too, because again, this is something that they needed. They need that ace for the rotation. He's in his 30s, so he's got some experience, even though he hasn't spent majority of his career in the MLB compared to, you know, where he came from before, in Korea. But again, what a signing. Probably one of the biggest, winners of the offseason, obviously, outside of the big free agent signings other teams made, but they really significantly improved, and it just puts a better, you know, it puts more excitement going into spring training, which is about a month away.
Mm-hmm. And I think there were a lot of questions heading into the offseason if Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins could ever pull the trigger on some big deals like this, but as it turns out, as we've seen, they obviously can, because they signed I think it's the biggest free agent contract for a pitcher in Blue Jays history, and almost the biggest overall, if I'm not mistaken, except for Russell Martin. So obviously they can pull the trigger, and it was great to see that. And I'm just very happy. We do have some listener questions to get to. I posted on Instagram, see if any of you guys had things you wanted to hear our opinions on, and we got lots of responses. I've picked out a few questions that I think are good, and the first one was on the Astros punishment, what we think about the Astros punishment, and that's from Zach_Kohlers12. And I'll just, going back to when we first saw this report in The Athletic, I was very angry, because this is a team that, you know, has been one of the best teams, and what we thought was one of the best stories in baseball over the past few years, you know, coming back from being a team in the dumps and in the basement, and really surging and reinventing itself and discovering inefficiencies in baseball and becoming a better team because of it. And that whole narrative has just been thrown out the window by this, because we've seen they were stealing signs, they were using trash cans, they were using video cameras, they were, maybe rumors flying around that they were using electronic buzzers, and it's just really sad to see, and I was very angry about it. And I was also very angry about the response from the Astros, or at least how they have responded in previous years. We've seen videos floating around from, I believe it was this postseason, 2019, where they, you know, they were in press conferences and they laugh off the idea of them stealing signs. And it was just really sad. And it's a sad thing for baseball. But I think MLB did the best they could in responding to it. They cracked down very, very hard on this, and I am very happy with the punishment for the Astros, because I think it was very deserved, because, you know, they broke the rules of the game. And I think MLB, the fact that MLB had warned teams before, when we saw the Red Sox stealing signs with Apple Watches, the fact that MLB had warned teams before, like, this is your last warning. If you do this again, the punishment is going to be obscene. And they lived up to that threat. It was very huge punishment. We got $5 million in fines, which I know doesn't sound like very much, and in actuality it probably isn't, but it's a maximum amount of money that MLB can fine teams. We have a year-long suspension for two key architects of the Astros' success, that, you know, maybe this is going to ruin their career, and frankly, I think it probably will. You have other people. You have the assistant GM during this time. He is on baseball's permanently ineligible list. You have a myriad of consequences, including draft picks and the fallout from this, leading to three different managers leaving their teams. That's Carlos Beltran, Alex Cora of the Red Sox, and then obviously the Astros manager. I think this is, honestly, I didn't expect it to be, but it is blown up to something that I think is one of the most devastating controversies in MLB history. I mean, obviously, you got the Black Sox, you got the steroid scandals of the early 2000s, but I think this might be in line with those two, simply because of the fallout of this. You have so many people whose careers are maybe over, you know, maybe this affects Carlos Beltran's Hall of Fame candidacy. This is really a huge thing, and I didn't expect it to be it, but I'm very happy that MLB responded in this way, and made sure that teams know this is unacceptable and this cannot happen again. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this will probably go down as one of the biggest scandals in MLB history. If not, it will be. And again, not even everybody suspended either. Alex Cora mutually parted ways, even though he probably fired from the Red Sox. There's no punishment yet, but it is coming. They're doing an investigation now. And again, Carlos Beltran, who managed zero games for the New York Mets, is done as well. And he actually wanted to stay, but the team let him go. And, you know, hearing about this too, a lot of people talking that it was actually Cora and Beltran who were the masterminds of all of this, going back to when both of them were in Houston and the 2017 team when they won the World Series. And again, it's all of that championship from 2017 has got to be tarnished now. You know, everything about their careers, even, you know, this unproven report that they were using electronic devices. And again, I'm sure you've seen a lot of videos too, where there's been actual videos of like Jose Altuve, when he hit that walk-off home run off of Chapman this year. Once he rounded around third base, he was screaming at the teammates, and he looked pretty serious too, did not take off his jersey. And if you can mouth his words, he said, "I have a piece on." And he was just mysteriously going in the dugout alone, changing from his jersey to shirt. And his explanation was that his wife was bothered by his teammates taking off his jersey. And obviously we know that, you don't really believe that at all. And how can you believe anything that the Houston Astros say? So I think the punishments right now, they've been a good thing. And again, they're respectable punishments for people who knows if they're ever going to get another chance in baseball. Especially Alex Cora, who, again, one of the masterminds apparently. And sure, a lot of teams can get away with sign stealing in baseball, but to this extent, with the use of technology and the different tactics that Houston used, it's really sickening for this to happen. And again, it takes away everything that, you know, you thought about this team going back the past few years, and even, you know, losing respect for some of the players who obviously were involved, but none of them will be getting suspended because that's just the way the league decided to do things. And I think that, you got to consider maybe taking away or vacating their World Series championship. I'm not saying, you know, you award it to the Dodgers, who lost to the Astros the 1 year in 2017. They also lost to the Red Sox the following year. I'm just saying I don't know if there's really a point in keeping their name as a championship just because of how tarnished it will be. And again, going down one of the biggest scandals in history. And it's terrifying. It's horrible to see. And, you know, it's crazy to think that, you know, investigations aren't even concluded with this, only that AJ Hinch and then the general manager, or the former general manager, who have been handed the 1 year suspensions, like you said.
Yeah. And I think, obviously, they didn't take away their championship, but in a way, they kind of did. They tarnished it in a way that makes it that no one's ever going to look at this championship in the same way again. No one's ever going to think, oh yeah, the Astros won this World Series fair and square. Oh yeah, the Astros were the best team in baseball in 2017. No one's going to think that now because we all know what was happening. We all know the punishment. We all know how seriously it was taken. So yeah, they didn't do that, but in a way they did. The punishment of it makes it clear that they didn't win this World Series fair and square. I do want to mention some of the other fallout of this. Dave Hudgens, who is now the Toronto Blue Jays bench coach, he was on the Astros during this. He spent 4 years as a hitting coach for the Astros, including during the 2017 World Series, but it looks like he is escaping this without any discipline from Major League Baseball. We don't know his involvement in this, but he was, I believe he wasn't named in the report that MLB published. He released a statement saying he cooperated 100% with Major League Baseball. I think he's fine. I don't think he was actually involved. I sure hope he wasn't, but, yeah, so obviously huge consequences. And you mentioned Jose Altuve, you know, motioning, like, don't take off my jersey. I have a piece on. Yeah, it's like some of the conspiracy theories about this, you know, like circling in on bumps on your jersey or whatever. I'm like, I don't believe that. But looking at that video of Jose Altuve saying, like, no, don't take my jersey off, like, that's a little bit suspicious. And I know MLB didn't find any proof of them using buzzers to get signs. But again, it's just the successes of this team have been permanently tainted. And no one will ever look at this team in the same way again. And I think rightfully so. And I just really, really hope that baseball never sees anything like this again in the near future, at least. Although I should note, there are some people saying that MLB knew about this before Mike Fiers kind of blew the whistle and went to The Athletic about it. I don't know how realistic those reports are, those rumors. But if MLB did know about this and just hoped it didn't go public, I mean, it sounds like something MLB would do. But I really hope it's not true.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. And, you know, all signs point to that video again, showing that it's, you know, there's a pretty good chance that, you know, that kind of proves something that's going on with them, like, even though they've already been caught for some of the things. I'm talking about, again, the electronical devices. And going back to that pitch he hit off of Chapman in that game, it wasn't even a fastball. I'm trying to remember what it was, an off-speed pitch. It was either a slider or a curveball or one of the two. And he was completely out in front of it, and I remember people at the time just saying, you know, crediting Altuve for all of this, you know, all of this, the skill he had and everything. And again, people, you know, Jose Altuve before this is, you know, in my opinion, one of the most likable players in baseball. You know, he's that guy who's, you know, relatively small, and he's one of those people that, you know, you can't stop but rooting for. And again, this just taints all of that, those players on the Houston Astros. And his home and away splits, there's a pretty big gap from what I've seen. Not as big of a gap as there was, I think, in 2017, but the past few years, the home and away splits have just been completely different. And it just maybe hints that, you know, this was something that they were doing. And if MLB conducts another investigation proving that there's electronical devices, even though, again, there was a report that you mentioned that they already knew, who knows if, you know, these players could even maybe get punished after this. Who just, it's really tough to know, you know, who exactly was involved. If it wasn't for, you know, if maybe everybody on the team was involved, a lot of, you know, we saw Trevor Bauer on the Reds tweet out that he's been hearing about this, or this rumor, for the past few years. And, you know, all this wouldn't even have happened if it wasn't for Mike Fiers, who was kind of like, I guess you want to say, the whistleblower in this, who pretty much said on a record that, you know, the Astros were doing this, and that pretty much started all of this investigation. So again, it's hard to know if everybody was involved, even if Dave Hudgens was involved. In the MLB report, his name wasn't mentioned at all. So you would think that he's okay, but again, who knows what's going to happen now until spring training. There's three teams, three contending teams, other than, I guess you can rule the Mets a contending team, but three contending teams who don't have a manager at this point. It's just a bizarre situation, and it's really something that you've never really seen going into the spring with, you know, I guess on paper, three talented teams in the Red Sox, Astros, and Mets. And it's really weird. And, you know, you think that this isn't even done yet. Again, there's still investigations going on, but it's pretty cut and clear, and it's pretty easy to see that, you know, the Astros were in fact cheaters.
Yeah, we still got a pending announcement about Alex Cora's punishment, and obviously he's not going to manage this year, because we've heard reports that his punishment is going to be either online or worse than those of Jeff Luhow and AJ Hinch, and they both got a year suspension, so you know this is going to be a lot worse, or could be a lot worse, so maybe thinking 2 years, maybe thinking personal fines, who knows. I do find it interesting that no players were punished in this. I know that the MLB report said that Carlos Beltran played a role in setting this up, I believe, but I find it interesting that no actual players were fined or punished, which was, I don't know how I feel about that, honestly, but I just want to mention Ben Nicholson-Smith just tweeted out a quote from Randall Grichuk about this Astros sign-stealing thing. I'll read it. It says, quote, "It's frustrating. We thought they were so good. Head and shoulders above. Maybe their talent was better. Maybe they have an analytics department that's just better. They've beat the curve. To find out this, it's definitely saddening. I think what a lot of people don't realize is how much it affects the game. Not just wins and losses, but guys at AAA trying to get an opportunity. Guys who are compared to them in arbitration. I think it's just bad for baseball." And yeah, that sums it up. The effect of this is not just a championship. It's not just wins and losses. It's also whole careers that, you know, pitchers who were sent down because they didn't do well against the Astros and missed out on their shot in Major League Baseball. Pitchers who earn way less money because they didn't pitch well against the Astros, and people who, you know, can't supply for their families. So it's, the effects of this are huge, and bottom line, I'm happy with what MLB decided in giving the Astros their sizable punishment.
Yeah, you know, even another penalty that they're facing too, they're missing, I think it's first or second round picks for the next 2 years. Yep. And that's massive for their farm system. And maybe another interesting note to see is, you know, maybe, you know, it's, you wonder if, you know, I know he spent most of his time in Houston in the minor leagues, but you wonder, you know, how much Derek Fisher knew. And, you know, with spring training around the corner, you know, it's hard not to imagine that he'll be asked about it in the spring. Again, I know he spent most of his time in the minor leagues. He had some stints at the major league level, you know, a competitive team at the time. It was hard for him to crack the lineup, but it's interesting, or it'll be interesting to hear how much he knows about maybe what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, moving on to the next question, but thank you to Zach for that question. It was a very good question. The next one is from Ben_Ham_10, and asks, who are you looking most forward to watching this year on the Blue Jays? And I gotta come out and just say, my favorite player is Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and I am most excited to see him this season. I don't know if I can fully articulate why, but, you know, you just have a favorite player, you really love watching them, and that is me with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And I think he is a very exciting player, but he hasn't realized his full potential yet, and I think 2020 could be the year that he does realize that potential, and it could be very exciting to watch him come into his own and be a very exciting player at the major league level, assuming he can stay healthy, hopefully. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, he's definitely up on my list of who I'm excited to see. And again, you know, he's been inconsistent, obviously, his first few years with the Jays. But, you know, last year, after he came back up from AAA, he came back up as more of a utility player and played more in the outfield. And, you know, he seemed to find his spot in the outfield. And even when he came back up, he was, you know, tremendous at the plate. And again, his fielding numbers are off pretty good too in the outfield. And I guess that kind of showed him that, you know, he's more of a natural outfielder than infielder. And going into, you know, a full season of this, you know, him playing in the outfield, and, you know, it's just him being more comfortable. Again, he could have the potential for a breakout season, like you mentioned, and he definitely is one of the exciting pieces to watch. A few players on my list as well. I'm excited to see Anthony Kay this year. I know he got a few starts last year. He was up and down, but again, it was only his first month in the big leagues, and, you know, he's got potential to possibly make the rotation and crack the rotation. And it'll be interesting to see how he, you know, pans out in a full season. Other players I'm interested for I'm also interested to see Danny Jansen this year. He had a down year last year at the plate, but, you know, his catching numbers were strong. And I think that, you know, it was a sophomore year, it was the second year, he's entering his third season now. And I wouldn't be surprised again for a breakout season from him. I'm obviously interested to see the young pieces in Bichette, Biggio, and Guerrero. Out of the three, I think I'm more excited to see Guerrero, just because, you know, during his season last year. I wouldn't say a disappointment, but it just wasn't as good as people were projecting and expecting it to be. And, you know, Guerrero also struggled mightily at times at third base, with just drops and throwing errors. And I think that, you know, his weight's always been a question. And, you know, there seem to be reports that he's lost some weight this year and he actually looks to be in better shape. And I think he's got something, you know, a little bit of something to prove next year, you know, just to show, you know, the whole baseball world what he's exactly made of. Bichette, looking forward to another full season. Biggio, I would say, you know, a little bit of an underperforming year last year. And I guess maybe the Jays still don't know what they're fully going to get out of Biggio. And I think it's something that, you know, entering this year, he's going to obviously have more of a role and more of a role with the team. And, you know, hopefully it pans out for him as well. Travis Shaw is also a good name, a potential dark horse who's looking to revamp his career. He blamed last season on a bunch of mechanical changes he made during the season. And he went back to his old swing, I think, near the end of the year, and his numbers, you know, were completely different from what he started with. And it was more of a Travis Shaw type of numbers that we've seen throughout his career. So he's another one that's trying to revamp his value. And for the rest of the outfield, I guess, you know, Randall Grichuk's always a cool player to watch. Great fielder, and you know what you're going to get out of him at the plate. And you know, those are my highlights. And of course, you can't not think about Ryu. He's obviously entering, you know, a hitter-friendly ballpark now in the AL East and just a tough division overall. You know, he's got to go to Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park multiple times a year. And you can even count the Tampa Bay Rays in there now as they've taken a step to being strong playoff contenders. And Yamaguchi will be interesting to see too. He his goal is to make the rotation out of the spring, but based on what I've seen or heard, the Jays are more interested in keeping him as a bullpen piece, but you never know what can come out of competition in the spring. So a lot of key players who I'm excited to see this year. And again, a lot of those players I mentioned are also potential dark horses or for breakout years. And again, you know, you would hope and you have a lot of optimism that this season's going to be better than last season. It seems that they're progressing in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely a lot of excitement. You mentioned Randall Grichuk. I just want to mention this totally off topic, but I find it odd that the Blue Jays are kind of treating Grichuk as like one of the key four players. We saw today in the announcement, we had Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Kevin Biggio, but we also had Randall Grichuk up there, and he's, I'm on the Blue Jays website right now, I'm looking at their roster, and they have an ad on the side of the page for spring training, and the player that they have pictured there is Randall Grichuk, and I find it interesting. Obviously, they signed him to that, what was it, five-year, $50 million deal last offseason, but I didn't think of him like in that way. I didn't think he would be treated as, I guess, a key player. But I guess it seems like the front office sees him as that, which I found interesting. But your answer kind of led into the next question, which is from Sheldon. Let's just say Sheldon. they asked, who is a dark horse player for the Blue Jays this season? And I have a lot of thoughts on this. I'm very hopeful that everyone will do very well. But I think I have four kind of main picks for dark horse players, four players that are kind of, I think, underrated and could have potentially enormous seasons. I think the first, this is kind of an obvious one, but Ryan Brucki, he missed out on a lot of last season with injuries. But I think this season, he will come back and he will be very, very, very good at his full potential. And I'm very excited to see him. Three other players, Reese McGuire. I think if he gets the playing time, he can break out and do something special. Trent Thornton, I have no idea why I think Trent Thornton's going to be really good, but we saw flashes of it last season. And I think this season he could be very, very, very good. That is if he gets the space in the rotation, and that's a problem. You have kind of a packed rotation now with Ryu obviously coming aboard to get Tanner Roark. Matt Shoemaker maybe in the rotation because he was just added on arbitration. And then you also have Chase Anderson and Ryan Brucki. So I don't know if there's room for Thornton in the rotation, but I think if he gets playing time and can figure out, because last season it was kind of off and on with him. He either had a really good start or a pretty bad start. And I think this season, if he gets the playing time, he will have more good starts than bad starts and can break out in that way. And then my last one is Jordan Romano. I'm really excited for this guy, Canadian kid. And we saw really, really good flashes of brilliance last season. And I think he just wasn't fully ready to play in the majors. But this season, I think we could see him become something really, really special out of the bullpen. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have similar players on, you know, of this potential dark horse candidates. Again, Jordan Romano, you know, thank God, you know, the Jays kind of got lucky with him coming back from Texas, as he was a Rule 5 pick, and it just didn't work out for him his first month there. So thank goodness, you know, it's always good to see, you know, Jays just having depth, and again, their pitching depth. And again, he's got a strong, strong case to crack the bullpen, like you mentioned. Other dark horse candidates, I had Barucki on my list as well, just somebody who had an injury-plagued season, and I guess the injuries kind of affected his performance based off of his numbers, and based off of his numbers from, 2018, when it was just, you know, his full season. It was a lot better than last year, again, with injuries. Other players I got on my list would be, let's see here. Yeah, Tanner Roark is another one for me, just because of, you know, what he brings. And it was kind of an interesting signing. It was one of the first starting pitcher signings that the Jays had this year. And again, Mark Shapiro says that they see something in him. They see upside in him. And, you know, he's had a decent career. He's had average numbers. And if he can put up, you know, the same numbers or a little bit better, that'd be good for, you know, near the bottom half of the starting rotation. Shoemaker's another one for me as well, just because he had, you know, I know he had only like two or three starts last year, but before he tore his ACL, he had really good starts, and he's another one that was trying to revamp his value last year, and he's going to try to do it again this year. And, you know, the Jays are giving him the opportunity, and I think the Jays even enjoyed him or liked the addition from the get-go from last year, so it was an easy kind of decision to bring him back. Reese McGuire is an interesting one as well, like you mentioned. I guess, you know, if Reese McGuire has a good spring and Danny Jansen, or he can keep up with Danny Jansen, I should say. I don't want to see anybody fail, but if they can, you know, if they can keep each other up, you know, I don't know, you know, there's a chance that that starting position's really in the open. And so I wouldn't say it's a clear cut favorite for Jansen by all means. And if Reese McGuire can have a good spring, you know, he can definitely make his case to be the opening day starting catcher as well. Other dark horse, and then I think my last one on my list would be Travis Shaw. Again, I mentioned earlier that, you know, he had a really down season last year, and the Jays are bringing him in for an opportunity to revamp his career. And, you know, he said he's going back to his old swing methods, and he did at the end of last year, and his numbers at the end of last year were strong. And, yeah, those are all potential dark horse candidates. And, you know, if all of these players can, you know, perform as to what we expected them to see, or what we expect to begin with, and what we've seen before in pitchers like Barucki, who's obviously come up through the Jays system, you know, all signs point to a good season.
Mm-hmm. I think I find Travis Shaw interesting, because I don't really think about him that much, because he, you know, the Blue Jays signed him to a relatively small deal, and I honestly kind of forget about him. But I think you're right in that he could break out, because, I mean, obviously, last season he had a really bad year with Milwaukee. He had a negative 0.9 WAR in 86 games, so he was really bad. But in 2018, like, he had a 4.1 WAR in 152 games, and similarly in 2017, he had a 3.9 WAR in 144 games. So he obviously has the ability to be good, and like you mentioned, he changed his swing towards the end of last season, and his numbers picked up. So yeah, I kind of forget about him, but he definitely has the potential to be good.
Yeah, he's got potential as well, too, just because of, you know, the opportunity that he sees himself in the lineup as, you know, the loss to Justin Smoke. He's going to be getting a lot of first base reps this year. He obviously can play around the infield. He could play some third base, and it I guess that also depends on how, you know, Vlad performs this year, obviously. He's looking for an improvement on the field. But again, Shaw's going to be getting majority of the reps at first base, so you know, the opportunity is there for him, and it's up to him if he's going to take it or not.
Mm-hmm. Fun fact, just looking at his baseball reference page, he has a nickname of Mayor of Ding Dong City. So he's got that going for him. Okay, well, that's everything we had to cover today. Thank you to everyone who listened to this. Thank you to Bryson for joining us for this. And hopefully, as the season approaches, we got almost a month. I think it's about 33 days to the first spring training game on February 20th, I believe. So that's very exciting, and we'll try to stick with you until then. But again, thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate or review this podcast and subscribe to it wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for listening.